done that, they're not, for the type.
Okay, welcome everyone to the House Human Services, Human Services and Housing Committee. Today is Monday, May 18th, 2015. I'm happy to be back.
Welcome back.
Thank you. I noticed the hearings went pretty quickly last week, so I think you love my vice chairs. I'm going to actually do the opposite of what our good administrator talked about because I have to leave in about 15 minutes to go testify on another bill. So we're going to try to work quickly through some of these work session bills because when we get to the informational hearing, that's the kind I can go back and listen to on the recording. So first up, I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 296A. And Robin, can you please read the bill?
Certainly. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 296A transfers administration and funding structure for elderly rental assistance program from Department of Revenue to Oregon Housing and Community Services, prescribes operative dates, takes effect 91st day after signee die. There's no revenue impact. A fiscal statement has been issued. It's minimal. And that is what I have for you.
Okay.
And there is no amendment.
Okay, got it. All right. Can I have a motion?
Yes.
Chair Puzo.
Chair Kinnegar, I move Senate Bill 296A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Peluso moves Senate Bill 296A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? All right.
I just have a question.
It's yes.
More just a sort of a point of order type question. Elderly person means 58 or older. Seems like most of the things we've done is set that at 65. I've been here. Do we know why they chose 58?
Is there someone here who can answer that?
I'm just curious.
Thank you, Deanna.
Like it's not a deal breaker, but.
Madam Chair, for the record, Deanna Mack, Department of Revenue. Representative Parrish, the current law is age 58 or older, and we're simply transferring it over to housing. So we've maintained the same threshold as what is in current law, which is age 58.
Thank you. Clerk, can you please call the roll?
You might have to declare a conflict of interest.
Representative Bueller?
Excused.
Representative Evans?
Aye.
Representative Gallegos?
Aye.
Representative Hayden?
Aye.
Representative Parrish?
Aye.
Representative Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Peluso?
Aye.
Vice Chair Starr?
Yes.
And Chair Kinnegar?
Aye. The motion passes, and Representative Peluso will carry the bill. I'm going to close the work session on 2296A, open a work session on 390A. Robin, can we please have a summary?
Certainly. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 390A clarifies and defines terms associated with statutes outlining tenant and landlord relations, specifies new permissible fees, including those for pet waste cleanup, clarifies definition of rent in relationship to housing assistance payments, prohibits tenant from removing, obstructing, or tampering with sprinkler head used for fire suppression, clarifies process for fee assessment and applications by landlord, grants fee exceptions for landlord and tenants from certain provisions, requires landlord to provide emergency exit routes, and outlines recourse for the absence, lists circumstances where tenants are not responsible for damage. As you might remember, we heard this bill first on May 11th. There is no revenue impact. A fiscal statement has been issued, and it's a minimal fiscal impact. There is no amendment.
Okay. Great.
Can Chair Kinnegar, I move Senate Bill 390A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Vice Chair Stark moves Senate Bill 390A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Chair, I have a...
Yes, Representative Evans.
Just a quick one. I appreciate the comments in terms of the clarity of the discussion of how this arrangement was arrived at. I want everybody involved to know that on this particular issue, I'm going to pay closer than average attention to make sure that both sides live up to what they've agreed to, because there are some things that I wished would have been included that weren't. So over the next year or two, I'm looking forward to seeing how this progresses.
Okay.
Thanks.
Good. Any other questions or comments? All right. Clerk, please call the roll.
Representative Evans?
Aye.
Representative Gallegos?
Aye.
Representative Hayden?
Aye.
Representative Parrish?
Aye.
Representative Taylor?
Aye.
Representative Buehler?
Excused.
Vice Chair Caruso?
Aye.
Vice Chair Starr?
Yes.
And Chair Kenny-Guy?
Aye. Senate Bill 390A passes. What, Representative Stark, would you like to carry the bill?
I'll co-carry it with...
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Close the work session on Senate Bill 390A and open a work session on Senate Bill 659A.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 659A directs Department of Human Services to assist families with a child who qualifies for home and community-based assistance in their state of residence, but also spends at least 6 weeks a year with a parent who resides in Oregon by sharing lists of community providers, contacting Medicaid in the child's state of residence, and providing documentation. You may recall that we heard this on the 5th of May. There is no revenue impact. A fiscal statement has been issued. It's minimal. And that's what happened.
Okay, good. May I have a motion?
Chair Kenegar, I move Senate Bill 659A to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Peluso moves Senate Bill 659A to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Comments? Questions? All right. Clerk, please call the roll.
Representative Gallegos?
Aye.
Representative Hayden?
Aye.
Representative Parrish?
Aye.
Representative Taylor?
Aye.
Representative Buehler?
Excused.
Representative Evans?
Aye.
Vice Chair Peluso?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stark?
Yes.
And Chair Kenegar?
Aye. The motion passes. Anyone passionate about this? Representative Gallegos, would you like
sure,
to share that?
Sure, I'd be happy to.
All right, thank you. So I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 659A, open a work session on Senate Bill 951.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 951 modifies charge, size, composition, and duties of Alcohol and Drug Policy Commission, makes composition discretionary, removes ex officio members, permits commission to appoint non-members to subcommittees, removes requirement and function of budget advisory committee, requires commission to make specific recommendations as a part of its long-term strategic plan. You may recall that we heard this bill on the 13th. There is no revenue impact. There is a fiscal impact that has been issued, and it's minimal. There's no amendment.
Okay, can I have a motion, please? Representative Stark.
Chair Kenegar, I move Senate Bill 951 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Stark moves Senate Bill 951 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Evans.
Chair Kenegar, just a quick note. As I told the senior policy advisor to the governor, I was probably a no on this. I'm going to give a tentative yes on this because of discussions with folks that had served on different committees before. With a caveat that if this doesn't fix it, then we look at another strategy, because rewarding bad behavior by simply saying, well, they're not going to make it, so we're going to make it easier for folks, is not a good precedent to set.
Right. Thank you for that comment, and I'm very eager to see if this is going to change. I was just appointed to this commission right before the legislature started. I was part of why, part of the fact that we haven't made a quorum, but I think it was...
The agency director's piece was what I was concerned
about. Yeah, okay. So I am very eager. This is a very, very important issue, and I'm very eager to see a structure that's more amenable to this working. And once the legislature's out and I don't have that as a conflict, I'm very eager to go to these meetings, and I will probably be consulting you, Representative Evans, because I know this is a big issue that you're concerned about as well. Any other questions or comments?
So I'm going to be no. I think we need to make sure that the agencies... I can see why we want to remove some, but I still just think philosophically I'd like to see somebody from DHS and OHA, you know, whether it's the director or their designee, still be there, still be regularly participating with the vote, and given how much money they spend in their budgets. So
I appreciate all these comments, and I'm going to take that to heart as I go and start sitting in on these meetings and make sure that there is a strong voice from those committees there in some form or fashion.
Some fashion. So, we all serve on work groups and task force, and some of the testimony we heard is people weren't showing up. I appreciate we're all busy. I think that's an executive leadership problem if your people aren't showing up to things you've assigned them to do, or, you know, it's not working. Mm-hmm. Simple change of these people probably aren't necessary. These ones need a designee. That could have been a change that we did. So, and that wasn't the choice, the direction that the governor's office wanted to go. And so, like I said, I'll just let you know, and hopefully it'll work out.
Okay. Good. Any other comments or questions? Okay. Clerk, please call the roll.
Representative Hayden?
Aye.
Representative Parrish?
No.
Representative Taylor?
Aye.
Representative Wiley?
Excused.
Representative Evans?
Yes.
Representative Gallegos?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Bluto? Aye.
Vice Chair Stark?
Yes.
And Chair
Kinigai? Aye. The motion passes. Who would like to be a carrier for this? Okay, I will be a carrier since I'm on the commission. I'm going to close the work session on, put my glasses on, 951. And I'm going to open the informational meeting on the Oregon Project Independence Pilot, Serving People with Disabilities, and then pass the gavel over to my vice chair. I just want to say that I wanted to be a part of the votes that just happened, which is why we switched the order. I missed all the votes last week, and I really care about a lot of these issues. I also really care about this informational hearing, and I'm particularly sympathetic right now to people with disabilities just living with a minor disability of a broken back over the last week. And so I will go back and listen to it online. I'm really sorry to miss part of it, and hopefully I'll get back here soon after testifying. So thank you. You want to call up the people? Okay.
Chair, we'll be sure to get services for you.
Thank you. Trying to be independent, but it's not working right now.
Okay, I would like to open the informational. Except you already said that part, didn't you?
Yeah.
Okay. Nicole Palmeter, if you would come up, please.
Thank you, Vice Chair Peluso. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Nicole Palmeter. Hazel Baker here today on behalf of O4AD, the Oregon Association of Area Agencies on Aging and Disabilities. Area Agencies on Aging are the statutory providers of the Oregon Project Independence, both the program for seniors and with this pilot project. I'm just here to introduce our informational hearing. I appreciate your attention to this. We are very pleased to have had the opportunity to provide this program to people with disabilities in this biennium for the first time ever, and I am going to turn it over to our panel, who is far more former fluent in what has happened with this program and the benefits and that we have seen in the last 6 months of operation. Thank you.
Ready then. Thank you. And I will then call Elaine Young, Lee Gerard, and Randy Moore up. Thank you very much.
Vice Chair Stark and Peluso, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Elaine Young. I'm a program manager for Northwest Senior and Disability Services. We are the Area Agency on Aging and Disabilities for the counties of Marion, Polk, Yamhill, Clatsop, and Tillamook. Our agency is also the lead entity under contract with the Department of Human Services to coordinate the pilot expansion of Oregon Project Independence. So we thought we would begin with just a brief overview of some data related to this pilot. So I will proceed. And hopefully I can run this PowerPoint. As you're very aware, revised statute 410-435 is the enabling law for Oregon Project Independence. And in 2005, the Oregon legislature actually revised the law to open Oregon Project Independence up to individuals aged 19 and older with disabilities when the program's funding was sufficient. And that has been a bit of a stumbling block in terms of the definition of sufficiency with this program. Then in July of 14, the legislature authorized $3 million to and directed the Department of Human Services to develop a one-year pilot to expand OPI services to younger individuals age 60 and under the age of 60. The department selected seven area agencies on aging to participate in the pilot, representing both rural and urban areas of the state. Northwest Senior and Disability Services was then selected as the lead entity to manage the pilot and coordinate with the other six area agencies on aging. DHS also established a steering committee to guide the pilot, made up of representatives from advocacy groups such as the Governor's Commission for Senior Services, the Association of Centers for Independent Living, the Home Care Commission, the Governor's Commission for Senior Services, I mentioned, and the Oregon Association of Area Agencies on Aging, as well as some representatives from some local Area Agency on Aging Advisory Councils. So to give you a little bit of an idea on the project, we began the project July 1. The first couple of months involved logistics of getting subcontracts out and folks trained, et cetera. We started serving our first consumers in September, late September. By the end of September, we had 52 consumers being served. And you can see the numbers as we chronologically go through time. When I pulled the data as of the 4th of this month, we had served 351 individuals. And we expect to serve by the end of June, when the pilot ends for this first year, about 400 to 450 individuals. This next slide shows you the number of individuals served by Area Agency on Aging. So we have there's a list of the Area Agencies on Aging conducting the pilot. The first one is headquartered in Pendleton, Oregon. It's the Community Action Program of East Central Oregon, very small rural area of the state. They have served 13 individuals and project to serve about 20 by the end of June. Lane Council of Governments, which is a single county area agency on aging, currently serving as of May 5th, 44, projected to serve 48, probably in excess of that. Multnomah County Aging and Disability Veteran Services, a single area agency on aging serving Multnomah County, of course, with the dense population, has served the majority of the consumers at 151 and expect to serve 186 plus. Our agency, Northwest Senior and Disability Services, we took a very small piece of the pilot because we were also coordinating it, really concentrated in our very rural areas of our planning and service area. We are currently serving 23 individuals. Oregon Cascades West Council of Governments, which is the area agency on aging for Lynn, Benton, and Lincoln, serving just under 50. Rogue Valley Council of Governments in Southern Oregon, Jackson, Josephine, again, just under 50. And then Washington County Disability, Aging, and Veterans Services, which is a single county area agency on aging, serving 23 individuals. Describe the folks that we're serving. 77% of the consumers live on a gross monthly income of less than $1,500. 80% of them, their income comes from Social Security disability. And as one would expect, their health insurance is Medicare because they've been on Social Security disability for more than 2 years. They report the vast majority of them of liquid resources of less than $10,000 for a single person and $15,000 for a couple of them. I'm the one that lives the data, and most of these individuals have very, very, very low resources available to them. As we expected, the majority of the folks are between the ages of 50 and 59. That makes a lot of sense because chronic health conditions compromise one's ability to do daily tasks as one grows older. 74% live alone, 60% are female, 40% male, and the vast majority are white or Caucasian. A little bit more about the consumers. We use a validated tool that screens the consumers for their risk of out-of-home placement. It asks them a series of 9 questions, questions such as what activities of daily living they experience needing help with, whether they live alone, whether they've had a fall in the last 6 months, what their natural support system looks like, how stressed their caregivers are. And we find that 73% of them scored moderate to high on that screening tool for risk of having to leave their own homes. That's very similar to the 60-plus Oregon Project Independence program that uses the same tool. 30% report having a fall with injury in the past 6 months and report that their family and friends that provide support to them are very overwhelmed and stressed. And then 50% of the consumers on this pilot, when administered the assessment tool to determine their level of need in their activities of daily living, and this is the same statewide tool that's used to determine functional eligibility for Medicaid in home services, 50% of the consumers on Oregon Project Independent Pilot scored 13 or below, and that's the same functional eligibility criteria for Medicaid in home services. So a few of our initial lessons learned, keeping in mind that we've really been serving consumers for about 6 months. First real lesson is that Oregon Project Independence, serving older adults, has been operating since 1975, so the natural referral systems of the Area Agencies on Aging are unfamiliar with serving individuals under the age of 60. So it's required a great deal and a lot of effort in terms of initial outreach and with the internal and community referral system that, like hospitals, discharge planners, et cetera, that would refer people to this program. We found that service provider capacity in a few of the Area Agencies on Aging were hindered, particularly in Washington County. They're having a lot of difficulty with both their in-home care agencies and the number of home care workers to provide services to individuals. We also found with the expansion of Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act that the Area Agencies on Aging, just because of the state data systems, had some difficulty identifying individuals who presented as initially being eligible for Oregon Project Independence and then finding out after the fact, as they delved deeper into the data systems, that they were some of the new eligibles for Medicaid and therefore not eligible for OPI. And that was some frustration both on the part of the Area Agencies on Aging, certainly on the part of the consumers. And then we wanted to share some of the unique characteristics that we found in the younger individuals being served by this program. We found that as compared to older adults, different life priorities. Some of them are still working part-time, a very strong desire to live independently, really resistant to wanting to give in and accept help, all under very understandable. This cohort tends to have more of a natural support system and a broader community than older adults do. We have also found that these individuals are benefiting from Oregon Project Independence for a kind of a stopgap service. They've been folks that have kind of fallen through the cracks in terms of public benefits and have needed that extra helping hand from the network in order to complete the eligibility and for other more sustainable public benefits that would help their needs. So it's been used a little more than it has for older adults as a stopgap. And then more so than older adults, this population has complex issues with co-occurring mental health and addiction issues and some extreme behaviors associated with their mental health diagnoses. Just wanted to share a couple of folks with you, and I know that you can read their description after the fact, but Barbara lives in Astoria. She lives on an income of less than $1,000 a month. She's a former teacher, has a master's degree. Through a number of chronic health conditions, she's no longer able to hold her head up straight. She cannot raise her arms above her head. She came to the program hoping someone could assist her in and out of the shower, wash her back, and shampoo her hair. And she has shared with that the caregiver is fantastic and her quality of life is so much better just having clean hair and a home that's just a little bit cleaner. Darla lives in Albany, and has, again, a number of health conditions. She reported that she hadn't been able to use her stovetop or her oven for years and relied on frozen food or other ready-made foods. Oregon Project Independence has enabled her to receive a hot, nutritious meal through Meals on Wheels. Mm-hmm. You may be aware that Meals on Wheels is only eligible for individuals age 60 and older. Folks under 60, it would cost them, but Oregon Project Independence can pick up the cost of that meal. She also experienced a number of unexpected falls, and the assistance she receives with showering and household chores has greatly improved her quality of life. Any questions before I show you a video of an individual that's on the pilot that lives in Southern Oregon? And she, because of the distance, couldn't come up and testify in person, but she made just a very short video.
I just have a question. I may have missed it at the very beginning. So is there an income limit to participation in the program?
No. Oregon Project Independence does not have an income limit nor an asset limit. But it does have a sliding fee scale, so income comes into play
sclerosis.
Based on your income. You pay a portion or a percentage of the cost of services, and that's the same for the older adult program as well.
And is the pilot full now? Are you still taking people, or are we going to wait to pass this and make that happen?
We are still taking people.
Thank you.
So this is Cynthia Klein, and she lives in Southern Oregon.
And so stress is my worst enemy. Well, today seems to be a good day. The bad day is I can't get up out of bed. It looks like a hidden disease. People feel that perhaps you're faking an illness or that you're just perhaps a lazy person. Some people with MS experience a lot of pain, as I do. And so that is a very stress and taxing thing on the body as well. And so having a caregiver come into the home has helped relieve some of that stress. I don't have to worry about things like grocery shopping, which is a major, major chore for me. Also, I have a danger of cooking and burning things. My caregiver also gives me companionship. I'm alone a lot of the time, and so the loneliness and the isolation can get to be a bit much. And so having that interaction with other people, it's a tremendous help. I don't have any other family other than my husband, so it's nice to be able to get that interaction with other folks. My quality of life, our life as a family, has improved very much. My little business is online, and so now I have the energy to work on my business. I feel productive again. I feel like I'm a person again. I am really happy that we do have the program now as a pilot, but I foresee a lot of trouble ahead. I don't think my husband would be able to work the hours that he does now supporting us. I already know from experience that he has to take off a lot of time from work to take me to doctor's visits. And so I would probably see us looking for more state assistance.
Oregon Project Independence is clearly providing a lot of stability for Cynthia. It's allowing her husband to continue working full time. And like so many of our OPI clients, it's very likely that it's preventing or delaying Cynthia from needing much more intensive and more expensive public assistance. For about $400 or $500 a month, OPI is a wise investment.
Okay. Are you done?
I'm done. I would.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Oh, and we'll wait for questions at the end, so.
Good afternoon, Vice Chair Peluso and committee members. I'm Lee Gerard, and I'm a senior manager for Multnomah County Aging, Disability, and Veteran Services Division. We're the area agency on aging and disability services in Multnomah County. And I'm here today to share the experiences that we've had with the implementation of the age-neutral pilot for Oregon Project Independence in our county. And primarily, the experiences we have are as a fairly urban and suburban. area. So some of those experiences are probably going to be somewhat different from what's happening in other parts of the state. We began working with this program initially when it was implemented July 1st, 2014, and we were able to designate three case managers to really just work solely on this particular program, which we think really was very helpful. And we brought on staff who'd had a wide variety of experience working with people who have a variety of complex issues. They'd had experience working with people with developmental disabilities, younger people with disabilities, and folks that had co-occurring other health conditions, behavioral health, or even addictions issues, which was extremely helpful. We've continued to keep enrolling people in the program, and so actually as of May 8th, we had enrolled 162 people in the program. Now, some of those people have moved on to other services, but it shows that there is definitely a significant need for in our area. The average age of the folks that we're serving is around 53 years of age, and similar to the demographics that Elena shared, most people are on Social Security disability and have Medicare, and the Social Security disability really does illustrate that this is a great program for people who have it at one time been able to work, but now are not able to do so. Most of the people live alone, but they do have broad networks of friends and family that are helping to support them. And the reality for these people is that they've had to transition from being working contributors in their communities to being service recipients, which can be a very significant life change for people. Our experiences with this program have been extremely rewarding. We've learned that this pilot has had a significant impact in enabling program participants to lead safer, healthier, and more engaged lives. Following are some of the key issues that we've been able to assist individuals with in our community. One area that was a particularly a big highlight in our area is that we have a high number of people on our caseloads that are living in affordable housing and were at risk of being evicted. One of the issues for people who are living in affordable housing is that they have to maintain sanitary and safe housing as part of being a resident of subsidized housing. And a number of people were at risk of losing their housing because they just really did not have the fiscal capacity to be able to maintain their apartments. And so one of the things that we were able to do is bring in some very heavy-duty kinds of housekeeping initially that we do. We call it chore service. And then we're really able to help people maintain their housing by having some ongoing housekeeping and supports for them. And that can be a particularly big issue because these are people that have faced a lot of life changes, and if they lose their housing, they will be at risk of being homeless. They probably will be homeless, and it's not like there's a lot of affordable and accessible housing out there available for people. We've done a lot. This population is really interested in being as independent as possible and as engaged, so they're very interested in the use of adaptive equipment and ways that they can try to be as able as possible. So and also to manage their own care needs as much as possible. So things like shower chairs, bathroom grab bars, lift chairs, and actually supplies that help them with medication management are things that are heavily utilized in our program. Transportation is a really, really significant issue. People think that because you live in the metro area, you have lots of access to lots of transportation services. The problem is that even public transportation costs costs money. And if you're on a very, very limited income, having those bus passes and tickets can just be too much for you. It may also be that you need some assistance to help with doing things like applying for the paratransit services and getting access to those kinds of things if you haven't done that in the past. We also found for folks that one of the big barriers around transportation is that people were actually having a lot of problems getting to their medical appointments because they didn't have transportation, or they didn't have transportation
transportation, they might not actually be able to take a bus anymore to go to that type of transportation because of their disability or even stamina issues. So transportation has been a particularly big issue, and we've had people tell us that it's made a big difference in their ability to follow through and actually work well with their primary care provider and get the health care that they need. And then finally, really, the case management support has been really a key thing for these individuals. Elaine talked about the need for folks to access other public benefits, and the case managers spend quite a bit of time working with folks, not only to help them to connect to a wide variety of services. Many of them have very complex needs and issues, and so they have to try to access a variety of different social and health and human service systems. So the case managers can really help them with that. But there's also a number of people that have ended up going on to other public benefits, sometimes even Medicaid long-term care services, when that became appropriate, and they were able to get the help guiding going through those systems. So really, it's been very interesting working with such a wide variety of folks, from the younger veteran with multiple sclerosis to the former registered nurse who lost her eyesight. We found that the information and access to community resources and relatively small amounts of personal and in-home care can really make a very significant and dramatic change in a person's life. We found that the program is very cost-effective, and it's easily adaptable to the specific needs of each person and makes a significant impact in allowing them to stay in their homes. So thank you, and if you have any questions, when we're all done presenting.
Okay. So Randy Moore is up next.
Hello, Chairperson Kenny Geyer and committee members. My name is Randy Moore, and I'm the Community Programs Manager for Oregon Cascades West Council of Governments. Oregon Cascades West serves 25 member jurisdictions in Linn, Benton, Lincoln counties, and includes the Confederated Tribes of Siletz Indians and a port district. We provide aging, disability, transportation, economic development, business lending, and other services to our communities. We are also the Area Agency on Aging, serving Linn, Benton, and Lincoln counties. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you regarding the pilot expanding Oregon Project Independence to serve younger consumers with disabilities, which is managed through our Area Agency on Aging. After becoming one of the pilot sites in July of 2014, we dedicated two part-time case managers to the program. One works in Albany with consumers in Linn and Benton counties, and the other out of our office in Toledo. She case manages all pilot consumers in the Lincoln County office. At the implementation of the program, we developed brochures explaining the pilot and immediately started doing outreach and marketing in our counties, visiting hospitals, veteran services offices, clinics, doctor's offices, housing units, and hospice and home health agencies. One lesson learned in the 10 months since we began the pilot is the importance of doing ongoing outreach and marketing, including revisiting potential referral sources. In September, we started serving the first pilot consumer for our agency. Since then, we have experienced steady program growth, serving a total of 51 consumers. We currently have 45 consumers enrolled. The average age of program participants in our area is 50 years of age. Case managers initially meet with all consumers in their homes to assess need and risk and provide information about local resources and supports. In our counties, especially the more rural areas, such as the coast and eastern Linn County, these resources can be scarce. In addition to the actual services a case manager may authorize, the knowledge that they share about local resources, such as volunteer services from faith-based organizations, can be invaluable and fill a much-needed gap in the limited hours and supports the OPI can provide. The most common benefits consumers in our area request are weekly home care worker hours to help with bathing, dressing, shopping, and housekeeping, Meals on Wheels, which provides hot, nutritious meals delivered to clients' homes, a check-in, and an opportunity for a few minutes of socialization with the delivery driver, and payment of monthly costs for emergency response buttons like Lifeline, which a consumer can push if they fall or have another emergent issue. We've authorized weekly attendance at a local adult day service center, giving family much-needed support in the form of respite from caregiving, and provided referral to other programs like Pearls, the program to encourage active and rewarding lives, an evidence-based program designed to reduce depression through problem-solving and self-activation, and Steps to Success, a program that promotes successful working relationships between consumer employers and home care workers. We've seen historically, through the longer-running OPI program that serves seniors and through the first months of the age-neutral pilot, that a small number of services can stabilize a situation for a consumer or their family and decrease utilization of more costly supports, such as long-term care and facility placement paid for by Medicaid. We feel that continued funding to serve younger consumers with the Oregon Project Independence pilot will prove to be good for our consumers and for our state. Thank you again for the chance to represent. I would be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Are there questions for the panel? Representative Gallegos.
I'm just curious. I mean, I'm curious about the program and the project. I mean, as you were explaining this to us, I just kept thinking about a couple of things. One, that your department has a lot of programs. And I assume it has to make some sort of choices about where to put its resources, what programs, and there's a review over what programs are working, which programs are not. So I was trying to think, well, how do you do that? How do you then take this pilot and decide, well, we're going to keep putting money there instead of over here with, say, nursing homes or foster homes or whatever? So I'd be curious about how you see that process happening. And then the other thing is, the fact that you're talking about 50-year-olds, I find that really interesting. I mean, there's two things that are going on, it seems to me, that one, the demographics with regard to this population are such that, I mean, what people talk about the 60-year-olds as being the new 40, right? And so people are just quite healthy at 50 and 60 years old. Yet we're talking about a group that apparently, obviously, is debilitated in some way that we need to provide them with services. So I don't know. I just find the whole program really interesting and how choices get made as to this is a demographic that we want to address, a population we want to address, as opposed to having resources for, say, older seniors who might be more acutely ill or whatever. I don't know. I'm not sure what my question is. It's just an observation, but maybe you could respond.
Chair Kenny Geyer, Representative Gallegos. Those are a lot of really good questions. Oregon Project Independence was meant to be and is a preventative program to hopefully provide that little bit of assistance, and we're talking about 20 hours a month of assistance on average is what's authorized for this program. In order to provide folks with that little bit of extra help so that they can remain at home and independent in the community and not have their health status decline or their financial status decline further such that they need more expensive public assistance such as the Medicaid program. And so how do we make these choices? Well, actually, it's the legislature that makes those choices. This is a state-funded program, and we live within the appropriation of the legislature. And I've been involved in this program since the beginning, in the mid to late 70s. And the program, as a state-funded program, has had its ups and downs because we're not receiving a federal dollar to match, and that's we have a long-term care system, frankly, in Oregon that's built on a Medicaid match, a federal match for dollars. But the program has been, as we look at it and analyze it, we see a small percentage, about 25% or so, that actually on an annual basis spend down in or functionally decline such that they go on Medicaid. So this little bit of general fund assistance is helping them stay off of a much more costly program. And so how do we make the priorities? It really is you. As representatives.
Asking, how should we make the priorities?
But pardon?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Maybe that was my question.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Would you like to respond as well?
Yes, please. Okay. So Chair Kenny Geyer and Representative Gallegos, Lee Gerard with Multnomah County. And probably the other piece of information that you may find helpful is our agency, we work both with older adults and people with disabilities, and we administer the Medicaid program for long-term care, which serves both populations. And we work very closely with people with disabilities who are consumers of long-term care services and also advocates, both for themselves and for the community. And they have been very consistent in their message to us as a community organization that they should have the access and the right to services that help them to remain as independent as possible and to avoid institutional care whenever possible. Right now, you know, outside of this pilot, they don't have that kind of access. So I think that's an important issue that we need to think about. And it's true that a lot of our, you know, our general population of adults are living, you know, they're healthy, we're active, but it really doesn't take that much to suddenly you're a person with a disability, so, or you're experiencing some kind of decline. So as Chair Kenny Geyer is experiencing right now, and it'll be short term, but but we never know. So thank you.
Representative Parrish.
Thank you. So is there, on that prioritization piece, is there a priority for people who are without, like, a familial support system? So, you know, somebody who doesn't have a spouse or doesn't have a child within a short, immediate radius to the home that can help them out. I mean, because for me, that would be a kind of a first order of magnitude would be someone who really has nobody in their life, and I can think of some neighbors like that in my community who, absent neighbors coming in and being supportive, don't have a family support structure at all. So is that a prioritization for the program at all?
I can address that. Yeah. So for the pilot, which we are still trying to grow and we're actively working to find participants for, we don't have those kinds of limitations. So right now we are serving all consumers that are coming in the pilot's direction. But for example, for our OPI for seniors population, we do have some areas that have waiting lists because there are too many consumers to serve, and there is a risk tool that's associated with that. So when we go out and we visit people in their homes, if we have a wait list in our areas, there's a weighing scale of how we look at, see whether a person might need services, what their, if their risks are higher, and not having any natural supports like that is one of those pieces.
So are they in the does the program strictly limit to people who are in their own home or apartment, or if, like, my elderly parent moves in with me, is now my home suddenly qualified to have those services because that person moves in with me? Mm-hmm. Or if it, if they're in a kind of quasi senior type facility, do those types of facilities count as well? So somebody who might be in otherwise a facility that has some level of assisted living, but they are technically in a, an apartment or self sustaining type of unit, even though there are some wraparound services maybe nearby.
Mm-hmm. So you want to talk about natural supports?
So when our case manager, representative,
Chair
Kenny Geyer, representative. When our case managers go out and assess an individual who's interested in this program, one of the criteria is to look at their natural support system and look at what their dependencies are with and without that natural support system. So we're not going to come in and duplicate what family and friends are already providing to the individual. But to answer your question, yes, if your mother moved in with you and you were here at the legislature most of the time working and you were not available to provide your mom with the supports for activities of daily living, Oregon Project Independence could come into the home and provide her approximately 20 hours per month of support to her while you were not available.
And that's not means tested at all?
It is not means tested to be eligible for the program, but income is used to determine a cost share for the program. So based on your income, the higher your income, the higher percentage of the cost of the service is you are billed for.
Mm-hmm. Can I follow up on the question about the mm-hmm. income? Is income considered like W-2 income? Is it considered investment income? Or is it based on, you know, what shows up on your overall 1040? When you say income, mm-hmm. how are we defining that?
It is the income that would show up on your 1040. So it would be interest income, liquid income coming into the household to pay for your daily bills. It is not resource tested. So.
And Social Security doesn't show up, though, on your 1040.
Social Security is counted. That's correct.
It is counted as well. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions for this panel?
I just want to make one other comment that, you know, when I did fall on last Sunday, I was really I was so appreciative to have health care and a job that allowed me a week off. I was thinking about, what do I do if I'm a single parent and now I'm for a whole week not earning income? So the thoughts around health care were, you know, I was really thinking about. But also they said I could, you know, spend the night at the hospital, and I really didn't want to do that. And I wanted to go home. And luckily I had the kind of care at home that allowed for that. But I thought about how that was saving me probably a pretty large copay. It was saving the hospital, the medical care system. But I couldn't have done it, obviously, if I didn't have people that could drive me home and take care of me. So just really appreciate what you all are doing.
Any other questions or comments? All right. Thank you very much. And we have no one else signed up to testify, correct?
No, it's anybody testimony information.
Okay. So I will close the informational meeting on aging in Oregon. And pass.
Would you like to do a motion on?
Sure. I'd like to make a motion that we suspend the rules so that Representative Bueller can vote.
Are there any objections?
Depends on who's going to vote.
Okay, Representative Peluso is asking to suspend the rules to make sure that Representative Bueller can vote on the four bills that we voted on. Is there any objection? Seeing none, Clerk, can you read all four bills so he can respond one by one?
I got to send Representative Bill 296.
Yes.
Bill 398.
Yes.
Senate Bill 659A.
Yes.
Senate Bill 951.
And yes.
Great. And if I fail to open the work session on those four, I'm sorry. I thought I was kind of doing so by asking the question. But I will close the work session on all four of those Senate bills, 296A, 390A, 659A, 951A. And any announcements from the committee? We actually are not meeting for the rest of this week, nor Monday, since it's an in-district day. So we won't be meeting for a full week. We have an informational hearing on Alzheimer's scheduled that's not posted yet. We've got some field trips coming up. And so stay tuned.
Thank you very much.
All right. We'll close the hearing. Thank you. Adjourned.